I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and welcome to the Motormouth podcast with Harry Benjamin and Tim Sylvie. This is the place where we meet some of the biggest names in and around motorsport, chat about their lives and everything in between.
This week we are joined by an absolute legend. If you're a Formula E fan, you'll definitely have seen him wildly celebrating on camera or commiserating in some cases. Team principal of the Mahindra Racing Formula E team, Dilbagh Gill, joined us to chat all about his life growing up in India, the Mahindra brand and how their last six seasons have gone in Formula E. With a host of top-level drivers and teams, they have been able to hold their own as the oldest OEM in the series. Thank you so much to you guys who continue to download and listen. If you like it, please do leave us a review. It really helps us to get bigger. Enjoy.
Welcome to episode 40 of the Motormouth podcast. Before we introduce today's guest, I need to head, as always, over to the English county that is home to the famous Flitch Trials, a very unusual competition that sees married couples compete to prove they're the most devoted to each other, and each couple has to convince the judges that they haven't regretted their marriage once in the past year. The winners are rewarded with the Flitch of Bacon. Yes, I do believe that is my best Essex-based fact to date. However, that is not the reason why we head to Essex. The real reason is to bring in my radio DJ, motorsport guru, thespian friend and colleague, Harry Benjamin. How are you?
I'm very well, Tim. Thank you very much. Once again, knocking it out of the park with Essex facts. Never heard that one. So you're doing well there. I am very well, thank you. Can we just take a moment to celebrate Paul de Resta winning at Le Mans? Because I feel like that's a big moment for me. And regular listeners will know how much of a fan I am of Mr. Paul de Resta. And I just wanted to make sure I got that in there with the round.
Yeah. Well, this is now old news because we are.
Yes, this will be way down the line.
We're talking from the future here. So we're probably talking 3 weeks or so now. We're recording the weekend, the day after the end of the Le Mans 24 hour.
Yep.
However, the reality is that the release of this podcast will be in 2 to 3 weeks' time. So.
And I'll still be on a high.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you are his biggest fan and he has yet to come on the podcast, exactly. Which we will forever not forgive him about. But we'll get him one day.
Yes, we will.
Right. Shall I introduce today's guest?
Yeah, let's do it.
Now then, this is exciting because we have our first current team principal on the show. We've had former F1 bosses, but never a current boss until today. Dilbagh Gill is the team principal and CEO of Mahindra Racing in Formula E, where he's been since the 2014-15 inaugural season. Gosh, that seems a long time ago. As one of the 10 founding teams and the only Indian team, he's enjoyed numerous wins and podiums, and we're delighted to have him here to learn about him, his life, Mahindra, and of course, Formula E. A big Motormouth welcome to Dilbagh Gill.
Dilbagh, thank you so much for coming on to the Motormouth podcast. What we like to do is we start with all our guests sort of taking us back to your roots, really. You know, where did you grow up and when did motorsport sort of become part of your radar?
Before we get down to that, I just wanted to correct you. As you know, the Le Mans was over yesterday. And another Essex best won. That was Alex Lynn.
Yes, of course.
Alex Lynn.
He did, of course. GTE Pro, well, round of applause to him as well. Absolutely.
That's good, actually, because that was my final Essex-based fact. I have run out. And in the next episode of the podcast, we've done 40-odd episodes. I've had one for every podcast because Harry lives there. And this is it. This is a big moment. It's gone now.
All right. So I just wanted to tell you a little bit about my knowledge about England. So I think
you've done well.
Touched on that, and now I'm good to go.
No, you've knocked out of the park yet. So, yeah, take us back to your roots and where you started growing up. Was it in India? And when did motorsport, become part of your life?
Well, I guess I hope you guys have a little bit of time because, I'm 50 years old now. So the last part of my life is quite a bit. So, I grew up in India. I grew up on a tea plantation. So my dad grew tea. So this was a very remote part of India. So we didn't have like schools, etc. So I went to a boarding school right when I was 5 years old. And funny enough, that boarding school was founded by an English gentleman 170 years ago in 1858 or something like that. So long, long, long time ago. It's called the Lawrence School. A fantastic school. Enjoyed myself out there. But what happened was, since I grew up on this real remote part of of India in the tea plantations, the roads were all private roads. Okay, so you could start having fun before you had a driving license. my dad was a pretty good driver himself. And so he let me start, I started pestering him, I think, when I was around 11 or something, to drive a car. He did allow me to do that. And it was good fun because we had these old cars, which were, I think, the Morris Oxford from UK, which was a 1950 car, which was imported to India. And I think it's been the longest production car ever till the last couple of years. It was still being produced, called the Hindustan Ambassador. I think it was like 40 horsepower or something like that. So, and we were on the tea estate. So it was a lot of it's uphill. So the car could never climb uphill. So whenever you wanted to drive fast, it was how fast you could go downhill. Okay, that's. And I still remember my dad used to be standing at the corner of those hills and saying, if I hear you lift off till you reach this point, I'm not going to accept it. So every time he used to move closer to the corner. But then I kept thinking, it's his car, not mine. So no harm in pushing it. And we were largely a labor-intense industry, okay, where there's a lot of people who get involved in it. And at one point in time, there was a bit of a labor unrest on the plantation. So I had to start driving the truck to bring the produce from the garden to the factory. And that's when I started driving a truck. And this was maybe when I was 14 years old. So I became quite good at driving a small truck. And then I became, I think, the youngest ever participant in the Himalayan Rally. And I think now maybe statute of limitations is okay. I entered a rally with a fake license when I was underage.
Oh, naughty, naughty.
Well, I finished on the podium.
Well, forgiven.
then everything's forgotten. You're all good to go. So how old were you then? Were you actually when you were...
I was 17, and in India you got a license at 18.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
I
did my application accurately. I claimed gave my correct date of birth.
Good.
And that guy didn't add. The guy who gave me the license didn't add the date. But okay, you cannot be 18 at this point in time. So the age is right.
Well,
so you obviously had a bit of an interest in automotive and motorsports at a relatively young age. And then fast forward a few years and you find yourself the boss of a Formula E team. Before we go into that further, tell us a little bit about Mahindra, because Mahindra is not just a Formula E team. There's a lot more to Mahindra and the business than many people will realise, particularly those that just watch the Formula E. So just give us a bit of background about Mahindra and your involvement with them pre-Formula E.
Okay. See, Mahindra is a 75-year-old company. We started in World War II assembling Jeeps for the Allies. So that's where a heritage of off-road vehicles comes from. So for the Allies, the kits came down of Jeeps, we assembled it, and now 75 years later, we are a conglomerate making bicycles to aircraft.
Amazing.
So we do electric bicycles, scooters, up to aircraft, and literally everything in between. Mahindra today is operational in more than 100 countries with 250,000 people.
Wow,
and
huge.
It is one of the more better-known brands in India and a couple of the other markets. So as an organization, we are pretty well-known. Fun fact, we are the world's largest manufacturer of tractors. We make the most number of tractors in the world.
Wow. And are they badged Mahindra or are they badged something? Yeah.
But Mahindra, so like if you go to United States and many of the other markets, we don't sell tractors in England yet. As a Mahindra product, we don't sell any product in England. But we do have our sister companies. I'm not sure if you guys have heard of a company called SsangYong.
Yeah.
Which
is
an automotive. So SsangYong is a Mahindra company.
Hmm.
And another fun fact, the Peugeot two-wheelers, if you look at a Peugeot scooter or motorcycle, that's a Mahindra company, including the brand.
Wow.
Oh.
God, okay, that's amazing.
So just, I think today, the French government, part of the presidential fleet, has taken the Peugeot Metropolis as a scooter. So that is a new product, which is part of the presidential fleet. I think it was just announced today.
Oh, very
so
nice.
There are like small little bits around the world. And I think one of our recent acquisitions, which we're really proud of, is Pininfarina, the design studio in Italy. So growing up, people of my age would recognize every Ferrari had that little logo on the side of it, Pininfarina. So that's something which we've acquired. And then we've created a company to make some high-end electric cars under the brand of Automobili Pininfarina. Yeah.
Amazing.
So in the last 6 years, it took us to make the world's slowest electric car to make the world's fastest.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? So Mahindra obviously has this incredible heritage and background. When did the idea first come about to enter this electric racing championship? You know, what's the electric market like in the automotive world in India? And did that play a fact? And obviously, you've enjoyed such success in Formula E now. So it was obviously the right decision.
So Mahindra was making electric cars for the last 18 years.
Wow.
In fact, the company which we acquired did sell electric cars in England many, many years ago. And again, I don't know if I should be proud of this, but at least it's going to remain historic that Top Gear voted our car, the Jeeves, the worst car ever. Okay, but remember, that was 16 years ago.
Yeah, okay. Come a long way.
So we're talking about electrics from that period of time. So we were pretty ahead, like far ahead of the curve at that point of time. In 2012, even before Formula E became an idea, we looked at our entire product range and we said, by 2022, we'll have at least 30% of our range to be either hybrid or electric. So that was done. We didn't even know Formula E existed. 2013 was when Formula E came knocking on the door and we felt, oh yeah, this could make sense. It could help accelerate our growth. It could help us. Because at that point in time, we also started looking westward in the sense, okay, the brand started growing westward and we felt, Formula E will talk about sustainability, talk about fun, talk about technology, and that's where we would like to get ourselves associated with. And by then, we also already had a couple of years of racing under our belt with a Moto3 team.
Yeah.
And that racing started totally by accident. It was a total accident. We started motorsport. And we felt it was starting to gel. We had a decent fan base. We were just starting to win in Moto3. So we felt, okay, there are legs for us to go internationally with motorsport. And Formula E could be something. So while we looked at electric, we felt it connected to our brand. It connected to our roadmap of increasing an electric portfolio within the company. So we said, okay, let's go in. But when we got in, we did not want to hide behind a proxy brand. So we came in as an OEM right from day one. So Mahindra today is the oldest OEM in Formula E. But we said, okay, if you're going to it, let's go try it on our own. Let's go have some fun out there. At the same time, I think it's going to be a learning journey. And honestly, last 6 years have been great fun.
Yeah, I'm sure it has. And you obviously had to switch positions to go in as team boss of the Formula E team. What were you doing before? And when you were put into this position, was there any, did you think, God, no, that I can't do this. This isn't my skill set. And what was it like going into the paddock that first time?
Well, I was looking after sports investments for the group. So at one end, I wore one hat to decide the approval of this project. At the same time, I removed that hat and I raised my hand and said, can I run the team? See, going back to my personal career, I've always changed industry and function. I've always enjoyed a new challenge. And I think my previous challenge to Formula E was much bigger than what we did at Formula E. I had a small startup which was developing software. And that software was running the FIFA World Cup. And I actually project managed the 2010 FIFA World Cup.
Right.
Okay. So 64
impressive.
Games in 30 days with 200 people in South Africa. It was amazing. So wow. I think coming from that, that's when I realized, okay, we actually started a company doing software for sporting events. So we had customers like A1GP, US Soccer, FIFA, etc. So the journey has been vast, doing different stuff. And I think when this came up, it sort of brought back memories that I would like to get back and think. So I've always enjoyed a startup organization. Mm. And I looked at this job like another startup. It happened to be in motorsport. But having said that, I think the moment we signed the contract on 28th of October 2014, I was having dinner with my boss, Mr. Mahindra. And I think we did have an, oh, what have we got into moment. But I said, we'll figure it out as we go by. I said, and I think what Mr. Mahindra and I think myself also, I strongly believe in is find the purpose, the means will follow. We've got into it. We are not going to sink. We'll find a way to swim. This is an industry which is out there. And I think, yeah, we sort of took that attitude and I packed my bags and came to England in I think, January 2014 to start a team. And yeah, it was good fun.
And that, and you know, the past six seasons of Formula E have proven that not only has Formula E in itself, the championship come so far as well, but you as a team have progressed massively as well. When you look back at season six, just gone, obviously a bit of a unique season, especially with, you know, the last six rounds all being in Berlin. How have you found season six in the most recent series of Formula E? You as a team boss navigating this sort of strange new normal that we go motor racing in?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure this is a new normal because we are still, I think, trying to figure out what's happening, right? Because every day is a change. And I think I'm really pleased that, okay, the team at Mahindra, the team at Formula E, were very pragmatic, very decisive. And at the same time, I think we did understand, okay, what the consequences were. Took some decisions pretty quickly in early March when the pandemic came out in terms of suspending the season. At the same time, I think after that, put an interesting plan on how this is all going to come together. It was communicated quite well to the fans, et cetera. And I think this whole concept of literally a season in a week in Berlin was really amazing. Yeah. Mm. I do have my story, but at the same time, I think from a championship perspective, it was really interesting. It put a lot of pressure on the teams, put a lot of pressure. But at the same time, I think it gave the fans like a build up to a spectacular end to a season, good racing, even though it was just towards one track with different bets. I thought we saw a lot of good stuff. So at the end of the day, I think looking back and reflecting, I think we handled season six quite well. Mm-hmm. But I think if I look back, Formula E has handled all the previous 6 years very well. So at each stage as it moved, because again, like I was talking to you guys earlier, I have been a guy who's done a couple of startups. In startups, you have pretty ambitious milestones. And I think this has been one startup which literally has hit all its milestones over the last 6 years in terms of growth, in terms of spectator stuff, in terms of technology, et cetera. So that's where I find it pretty unique and I find this pretty exciting is that we're still growing, we're hitting our marks. And I think that's something which is really amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing when you think a company of a quarter of a million people and you're still growing and it's doing incredibly well. And as Harry mentions, you know, it's all come to fruition on the Formula E side. I mean, you've had tremendous success and you've been there since the beginning. And on that subject, it's changed immeasurably in the last six seasons. The cars have changed, the batteries have changed, there's been new manufacturers come in. When you first started in the sport, did you imagine it would grow this well and this quickly and you'd have so many big manufacturers and brands coming into the sport?
Guys, I think if anyone tells you today that 6 years ago they expected Formula E to be this, I'll tell you the guy's flat out lying. Okay, even Alejandro Agag, okay, the founder, the most optimistic person you can see in the world, I don't think if you look at his business plan, it wasn't like this. So I think we have exceeded expectations, to be honest, at this point of time. But at the same time, we pretty early, I think by season two, we started realizing that, okay, we are going to be exceeding goals. So the goals became higher and higher. So we actually sort of started like tuning it to a certain extent to a higher level. So I think from a perspective, it's been an immensely satisfying journey because, you know, we have been doing stuff right. Because in the initial part, remember, we had to start from a negative position. People are wondering, what the hell are we guys about? Okay, the petrol head said, is this ever going to take off? So we had to first move the sentiment from being negative. So what we should say, like moving petrol heads to become spark heads. Okay, so move that little bit sentiment. That sentiment turned on quite quickly. And at the same time, it was really nice to start seeing, okay, for a brand like Mahindra, to start rubbing shoulders with the Porsches and the Mercedeses. Because see, for us, those are all aspirational brands. Mm. Let me be clear about it. It is a privilege and a pleasure to be racing against those names. Because when we grew up, those are the names I always saw and I never expected that one day we would be racing with them shoulder to shoulder, never thinking that we are an underdog, but we are there on our merit. And that, I think, really gives me a lot of satisfaction.
Have you seen, with your involvement with Mahindra in Formula E, has there been a direct positive correlation with the business sales in India or perhaps worldwide?
See, when you look at our measurement, there are multiple parameters. So like when we came in strategically, we looked at two bits to grow our brand internationally and technology from race to road. Our brand awareness, international markets like Western Europe, America, et cetera, has grown exponentially. We've launched new products, et cetera, in this period of time. We have grown into new markets. And at the same time, also on the race to road part of it, we went and launched Automobili Pininfarina and came out of the car. So we have actually done stuff in a pretty quick way. And we realized, okay, we would like to move the brand up to that side. So if I look at it in 6 years, Mahindra has done pretty amazing stuff. If you remember, it was 2 years ago in Rome, at season four, when he launched Automobili Pininfarina. A year later, there was a model car there. And if he had the race this year, he would have had a running car there. So in a short period from launching a company to have a 1,900 horsepower car and where we were able to transfer technology, I think that just shows the skill, the rapidness with which our organization works. While it's huge, I think Formula E is sort of at a point where we are able to influence a larger part of the organization since we are working from a startup mindset.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like for us, like there's just absolutely no limits.
Sorry, Harry, go on.
No, I was going to say, Nick Heidfeld, isn't he? Obviously, former race driver, now still associated with Mahindra. He's working on that project, isn't he? Testing the car, is that right?
That's right. So he's the head of development for the car, for that particular car. So he's drives it, so he has all the fun. Yeah. And at the same time, yeah, he's also a reserve driver for us. So when he jumps back into our car, he says the car is really slow.
And that's the thing, though. We've discovered that in driver contracts, now, is this true, that you tend to write in that all drivers have to leave a helmet for you as a clause? And looking at our audio listeners won't be able to see this, but looking at your background,
I think that's confirmed.
I think I spy a Bruno Senna helmet, a Nick Heidfeld helmet. I'm not sure who the red one is, but is that clause true? And obviously, I'm thinking perhaps it is.
Well, obviously, I'm not going to tell you details about driver clauses, but our drivers are really good. At the end of the season, they do leave a helmet back as a sake of memory for all of us. So, yeah.
How generous.
We do have some for our sort of history. And I think as we build a team, I would love to have how we have grown. And the red one is actually Jerome's helmet.
Jerome, that's it. I recognized it, but I wasn't quite sure whose it was. Course, the iconic Senna colours next to it as well.
Yes, absolutely. Take us through some of your best memories as team boss or your highlights. Obviously, your first win in Berlin in 2017 and a third at that same event. How did it feel getting that win? Are there any other highlights that really stand out for you?
Well, I think the whole journey of Formula E, honestly, has been a highlight. Okay, because we have influenced in our organization quite a lot at Mahindra. Okay, but having said that, I think for me, if I look at it, there are a few milestones which sort of stand out and I'll always sort of reflect back. One was September 13th, 2014, the first race in Beijing. Man, this championship has started. Okay, like while we were all like talking about it, we went there racing around the bird's nest. It was really amazing. Like, you know, in China, around the bird's nest, 20 cars and we go green and it sort of went on. I think the second bit was obviously our win in Berlin because we knew it was coming by then. Season three was a breakout year for us. We started literally like doing a podium at every race prior to that. So it was building up. And especially I think Berlin was doubly satisfying because we were pretty dominant that weekend. It was a doubleheader. We actually won both the races. The second day, Felix was given a 10-second penalty and he dropped from from pole position. He took poles to light, I mean, Flag's victory that day. But then since we had this unfortunate crash in the garage between Nick and Felix themselves on the second day, we got a 10-second penalty. But he still finished second with a 10-second penalty. That was how dominant we were that day. So I think from that perspective, Berlin was really good. And overall, I think what satisfies me is that this little baby which we put together is now becoming a young adult. And it's becoming a young adult which sort of can stand by itself. By having a lot more folks coming on board. I never expected it to be 64 people strong by now and stuff like that. So I think, overall, it's a satisfying journey.
And as with all racing journeys, as with all startup journeys, there are, of course, incredibly challenging moments. So if we flip that question around, is there a particular moment that's been quite challenging for you that sticks out to you?
Oh, there's been quite a few of those moments, to be honest. Okay.
I suppose, was it, as well as getting going green around the birds, it must have been a huge challenge, perhaps logistically, or was it all quite straightforward?
You know, I think from my perspective, it was reasonably straightforward because we had contracted all the professional running of the cars to Carlin. Okay. So they were a professional team. They knew what they were doing. And so at my point of time, to be very honest, I think we were learning on the job from my end, helping them a little bit on the electric side because we knew a bit more electric mobility than them. But they were like really the masters of what they were doing. If it sort of stands back and if I reflect back, okay, what sort of still something to wake up sweating was, we decided towards the end of season one to move away from Carlin to another team. So at that point of time, we also like formally decided to allow manufacturers into the championship because initially the plan was for the first 3 years we will run with the standard cars. But after 1 year, since the championship grew, we said, okay, by season two, we will have manufacturers bringing their own powertrains. And since I was moving from service providers, I didn't have any technical staff. I'm not technical, but we had to go design a powertrain for the next year's car. And that was when going and trying to do a gearbox motor and laying the specifications yourself and realizing that entire next year's car is on someone who knows nothing. Yeah. I think that for me brings out cold sweat. And I think we were quite good then. And I think the interesting part was the most of the help I got in designing that car was from one of our competitors. I worked with one of our competitors' engineers openly. Okay. And he said, okay, guys, because we didn't have a team. I didn't have staff. I had not yet hired our folks into our team. Our technical director, et cetera, hadn't come in. So just imagine a guy who has no background in electric mobility, was not run motorsport, is trying to design a car on which is going to be homologated for the next year. And we were pretty successful here. We got a podium in the first race of the car.
Yeah. Terrific stuff. Now, Dilbaggill, there are important moments in your life, such as going into Formula E for the first time, getting your first win. However, this, sir, is the most important of them all. This is the Motormouth quiz, and I shall pass over to my esteemed colleague to introduce it for you and see how you get on.
Yes, thank you, Tim. Dilbag, welcome to Motormouth. It is the hardest quiz in motorsport. There is a lengthy leaderboard. In fact, there's over 30. Unfortunately, one of your former drivers, Karun Chandhok, bless him, is at the bottom of that leaderboard. He didn't do very well. But I have got...
Karun has done badly. I don't know what I'm going to do, man.
He's
my local historian.
Everybody says that. To be fair to him, we had a different scoring system when we had him on, but even when I translated it, still didn't do very well. But either way, we'll let that slide. We've got people like David Coulthard in the midfield, around 10th place, 10 points going. The maximum you can get is 13 points. And if you get 13, you go right to the top of the leaderboard. I have four clips that we're going to play for you. And after I've played you one, I'll ask you a couple of questions. And there's 3 points up for grabs for each one. Does that sound doable?
Is there ask a friend, call a friend, or anything like that?
Absolutely not.
But having said that, Harry is the softest quiz show host on the planet.
I am.
So a little bit of arm twisting and you'll get 3 points all over the place.
Yeah, let's go and embarrass me.
I am. Okay. Let's have clip one because I just need the leaderboard because I forgot I didn't actually have it.
I heard the cupboard door creaking.
I know. I'm in my little cupboard. I forgot the leaderboard.
Have you got it?
Hang on.
I've got it. You got it. Right. Are you ready? Here comes clip number one. Listen carefully. This is quite a long one.
Well, there's lots of dust coming from a safety car on my face because I'm the first car in the queue. But, it's pretty good. Not as bumpy as I thought for a concrete surface. Obviously, we're going at slower speed, so it'll be interesting to see what the corners are like and once we get up to speed a bit more. But it seems like quite good fun. The last sector is going to be really, really tricky in qualifying, I think. When we get a 200 kilowatt mode, it's going to be quite quick through there. You've got to hustle the car around to get a lap time.
I think you'll get this one.
Thank you, Phil. Yeah, that was a particularly long one. Okay, so your questions are, Dilbag, who was saying all that? What track do you think they were at? And what year?
I would I'm just going to hazard a guess because I'm old. I'm getting deaf in my ears, so I'm taking excuse. I would say that's Karun Chandok, season one, Berlin.
Wow. 3 out of 3. Boom. Fair play. What a strong start.
No,
I thought you'd get Karun, but I didn't think you'd get Berlin. So that was a very good try.
That was Karun all day long. I mean, most people would have got Karun. That's the easiest one.
Yeah. They get harder from here. Okay. Here's your second clip. Strong start.
Here we go.
It's nice to be quick, but there is a lot more to this track and to this weekend than just being quick. So, yeah, the challenge is too big. So it's nice to be here, and hopefully we can repeat it in qualifying.
Okay, same questions apply. Who, when, and where?
This is Bruno.
Absolutely. Correct. 1 point in the bag.
I think this is Monaco season one again. He did FP2. He was fastest, and you're looking at him to repeat this in quali.
Yes, 100%. Oh, and the FP2, I'm tempted to give an extra point for that.
Don't do it.
You were fastest in FP2, if I'm not mistaken.
You were. And then, unfortunately, the race didn't quite pan out the way you wanted to. Yeah.
Actually, Harry...
Yeah, because you had this massive crash that
yes. You, I think there was about 10 cars involved. Yeah, I won't give him a bonus.
I was going to say, maybe you should, because for exceptional answers, maybe we should give a little bonus point, because it's getting so congested up the top of the leaderboard.
It is getting particularly... You know what, I'll put it in brackets for now, and then we'll see what it's like come the end. And
the brackets give you that little extra lift. Right.
Okay, doing really well so far, though. Full points. Let's hear clip number 3.
Yeah, the rear's broken. I need to stop. Tire is coming off.
Okay. Man! Oh, always makes me jump that bit.
Okay, same questions yet again. Who, where, and when?
I think... This is Pascal Marrakech, first race after Degrassi hit him, first lap.
Absolutely. 100% accuracy there.
The man's a motorsport encyclopedia.
Yeah, none of this memory fading. You've got it right in there still. Okay, final clip for you before we have a bonus question. So listen to this, your final clip.
Here we go. Oh,
mental,
my
absolutely mental. Yes.
Do I have to say the answer or the answer's here?
The Fez.
For our audio listeners, Dilbag, we'll say it verbally.
Okay, so that's Marrakech season 5. After Jerome finishes the race, 6 laps going in, he was still running 3rd. The 2 BMWs crash into each other. We have a safety car for 5 laps. And then the last lap, it's a 1-lap shootout. And Jerome finishes locking up in the last corner. Robin Frenz is right on his back. I think it was 0.017 seconds or something like that when he went into the race.
100%. Wow, this is going to... You're on for you don't need the bonus point. You're on for a top positioning.
I'm feeling overwhelmed. Keep going.
This is your bonus question, though. Last one we're going to chuck at you.
Tough one.
How many points did Mahindra finish with in season 1? And if you get within...
58, 40, Bruno, 17, Karun.
Oh, he doesn't need it with it.
Full house.
Bill Baggill, you have scored 13 out of 13 points, which puts you right at the top the leaderboard. You have finally...
Can I scream at Jerome now? Yay!
Literally, you need to scream like that because you've just displaced Connor Daly, who is currently top of our leaderboard. But now it's Dilbag Gill. So Dilbag Gill, congratulations and thank you for playing Motormouth.
That is so exciting.
Thanks, guys, for having me. I really appreciate that. And it was really good fun to go back with some lovely memories of the last few years.
You're welcome. But we're not done with you yet. Don't go anywhere. But that was you smashed it. That is the best performance we've ever had on the quiz. Well done, you. Now listen, let's get back to Formula E. So we heard one of your I think it was a podcast or an interview with Rob Watts from Inside Electric, some friends of Motormouth, that season 6 was a year of transition for the team. Why is that? And let's start looking ahead to season 7 and your expectations there. But take us through the transitional part of season 6 first.
See, as I said, like earlier, we started with an outsourced model and we kept bringing the outsourced inside because the championship started getting a lot more serious. We were able to attract talent. And in season six, we decided that we're going to bring everyone in-house and finally have a one Mahindra team. So that's what happened over the last 1 year. So we've moved to our new premises in Banbury, brought in everyone under the same roof. And also at this point of time, we signed up with a major engineering company called ZF to help us with the powertrain development, etc. So to a large extent, I think it's sort of a reset button for us because now I think we are responsible for our journey going forward. And it's the people in-house. So it's a lot of people joined us during the year and helped us grow. And I think at the end of the day, yeah, it's a transition because now this is a Mahindra team now.
Yeah, it's exciting, really. It's as you say, it's all go from day one almost again. Now you've also secured Alexander Sims for next year as one of your drivers. Haven't confirmed the second driver yet, but how important is it to have someone like Alexander Sims on board for the season going ahead?
Alexander is like an amazing person. I think we've been looking at him since he started in Formula E. So his first year being DaCosta's teammate was amazing because, you know, DaCosta sort of being the standard driver right now, and he compared very favorably to it. Alexander's single lap pace was never under question. I think he's improved a lot in his racing, and we all realize Formula E, it's the second season when he starts sort of getting the rhythm coming on board. And also the next part, which is not really, I won't discount it, but I think it's really important, as I said, like we've been starting to regroup our organization and Alexander lives 45 minutes away. So I think that also helps in putting a new team together where he can come and start working with that team in terms of pushing it forward in the direction on the infrastructure side, etc. And we've been a very insular team for the last couple of years. It was largely sort of Mahindra homegrown. Our drivers came from outside or we had from a service provider, etc. So we felt, okay, it's time for us to also get a little bit of understanding what's happening in the market with our competitors, etc. So Alexander has raced for a team whom we rate pretty very strongly, BMW. And so we want to also learn, okay, like what are we doing right? What are we doing wrong? And get a perspective from someone who's in it from the other side.
Yeah. Any hints? Bear in mind that this podcast is being released in 2 weeks. So we've got a 2-week run here. So if there is a little exclusive that may already be out by the time this gets aired, feel free to share.
No, I think we are talking to a few drivers at this point of time, as it's obvious thing, but
nothing to give away. No worries. Actually, just off of that though, is there obviously, you know, in your first season you had Karun in the car, Indian driver, Indian team. Are there any chances of that happening again with a young Indian driver? Is that something you would like to encourage? Are you looking at it, or are you literally just looking at who's out there at the moment and who do we want, who fits best?
While we are really proud of our Indian heritage, we are a global team. Mm-hmm. So the way we look at it is like, we are a global team headquartered in India. At the same time, so we are looking for the best talent which is available worldwide. And to be honest, I think, well, yes, there was a correlation between Karun being from India, etc. But we wanted someone who we could trust, who we knew. I knew Karun growing up as a child because I used to race against his father at some point of time. So it helped like get our team started. And, you know, with Karun's knowledge, his expertise, he's an encyclopedia. And I'm seriously so happy that I'm slightly higher than him on the leaderboard right now. For me, that's one victory, man. I'm going to like rub it in when I see him next. I love that guy. And amazing because he's like a Mr. Whatever, Wikipedia of motorsport or something like that. Yeah, so he came in and really helped us, I think, put stuff together. But at the same time, we are looking at talent out of India. But for us, it's who's the best driver anywhere in the world. Yeah. We'll try and get them. Yeah.
Now, what's the future look like for Mahindra? You've fast-tracked to this point. We're coming up to season seven. What's the next few years? What are the milestones for you?
I think from a perspective, see, we are here in Formula E and we want to stay in Formula E. We are one of, I think, maybe two or three teams which hasn't liquidated any part of its equity. We came in season one as a 100% Mahindra team. 6 years later, we are a 100% Mahindra team. So our commitment to the championship is there. Electric mobility is really important for us. We are starting just to grow the Pininfarina brand, etc. I think for me, as a goal, is how do we become a consistent, relevant player in this championship? Now, we've had a couple of real good seasons. Last season wasn't the best. So how do we sort of get back to being a consistent team in the top bracket of this championship. And I think that's something which is really important for us, because I think Formula E, while we did see a little bit in season six, I don't expect this to be the norm where one team is sort of going to run away with the championship ever. Mm. It's not going to be like the Mercedes or Formula One. So as long as we are there fighting year after year, I think that's something which will give us a lot of satisfaction.
And away from the racetrack now, what do you like to do? Do you like to relax in any particular way? How do you take your mind off things?
Okay, no time for... I sleep a lot.
So, wish I could do that.
For me, my hobby is sleeping.
Yeah, nice.
And I think I'm the most useful doing that because I don't get into trouble then. No, I think I like working with my hands, so I do a lot of work at home. I built a very green home a couple of years ago. It's a certified green home, so I spend a lot of time doing stuff out there. It's like if you look at the various levels, it's called it's a LEED Gold certified, which is the highest level for personal residence. So I spend a lot of time doing that. I like gardening. Stuff out there, so it's like something to do with my hands.
Yeah,
keep myself busy. So it's, a little bit of carpentry and stuff like that.
Talking to things like carpentry and so on. Do you outside of what you do? You're obviously a businessman, entrepreneur. You've been involved with startups, motorsport. What are your hidden talents? Is there anything you do that people don't know about that you're exceptionally good at? You mentioned carpentry there. Is that a big thing for you?
Well, I think I'm reasonably good at that. So if push comes to shove, I think I can earn a wage as a carpenter.
There we go.
Always good to have a backup.
Always good to have a backup.
Again, flip that on its side. What are you terrible at? What are you so bad that you just can't do it?
Man, nearly everything. I'm really bad. My body coordination is horrible.
Oh, really? Not a dancer?
For between my mind and my body, there's no connect. Like there's something lost on my neck out there. So my mind wants me to do a lot of stuff. My neck, the rest of the body doesn't. So I'm a very uncoordinated person. So I'm not very sporty or anything like that. So I think I'm really horrible at it. I will never try a physical challenge.
I'm really horrible, basically, at everything apart from what I do. Now, listen, we have three final questions for you, which we ask to all of our guests, and we get varying degrees of answers. Harry, why don't you kick off?
Yep, Dilbag, what's got you excited at the moment?
Well, when you talk about the moment, I'm talking about the moment now.
Now.
I think later this afternoon, we're going to finalize a livery for season 7.
Oh,
so I'm just waiting got our internal design team and an external team to do the submission. So once I get off this, I'm going to be looking forward to that submission. So
very exciting.
I think that's something. So that's like when I'm talking about like 15, 20 minutes after this call. So it's now.
Is that
the internal reveal of delivery, or is that a public reveal?
No, that's a reveal. Like it's basically for me to choose shortlists. So
right.
I'm going to be seeing the first drawings for season 7 livery concepts from our team.
Wow.
This afternoon.
That's a fun way to spend the afternoon. If not doing what you are doing, what would you be doing?
I think today I'm in England. The weather's nice. I would like to go outside for a walk and spend some time because it's September. Having a lovely day like this in UK in September, you're not going to get many more of these. So I think I'd like to do something outdoors this afternoon.
I like that. That's a totally different take on that question, but I really like where that's gone. Harry, over to you with the last one.
I like that. Okay, Dilbag, final question for you before we let you go. What are you scared of?
I think today it's my teenager daughter. 17. Okay. She's 17. She's got an opinion. I think, to be honest,
yes.
Going to college next year, you know, a high school kid. When I think of what I did when I was a high school kid just before college.
That's amazing.
That is brilliant.
What a way to finish. Dilbag, thank you so, so much for joining us for the last 45 minutes or so. Pleasure talking to you. Hugely exciting times ahead for Mahindra Racing and the company as a whole. We wish you all the best for season 7. Let's hope it's uninterrupted, and perhaps we'll see you in a paddock soon.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. And please do tweet the leaderboard, okay? In my life, I want to see myself leading something. Okay, I've never led something in my life, so this is a perfect personal moment. So I think that's the most I'm most excited about right now. I'm on the leaderboard.
Absolutely. Yeah? We'll make sure to get them. We'll be loud and proud with that. Loud and proud.
Absolutely. Thank you much, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth _, Instagram at Motormouth _official, and on Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can download the Motormouth app where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile and interact with others, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. Don't forget to like, subscribe and review. And until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.